It is 6:06 on the Central Coast. Good to be with you. I'm Dave Congleton, kicking off the 6 o'clock hour on this Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. Tomorrow, State Assemblyman Jordan Cunningham will be here. Michelle Doster checks in. Also, Trish Norman will be with us. On Friday, it's Dr. Gary Forsman from Middle Path Medicine. We are here weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 on AM 920. FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. Don't forget to start your weekday mornings off with First Look. Andy Morris and Scott Taylor have you covered with everything you need to know to get you out the door. Followed by Mr. Rush Limbaugh from 9 until noon, followed by Mr. Mark Wilson and Mr. Craig Hill from noon until 2. We give you a dose of Dave Ramsey from 2 to 3, and then Craig and I will be back at 3:05 with a Thursday edition of Hometown Radio. In this last hour, always good to have Dr. Larry Martinez on this broadcast, political scientist extraordinaire. We reached out to Larry to talk about a couple of different things. If you have been following the news in Washington, D.C., and I know at sometimes it just must make your head spin. I get that. But I'm a child of Eisenhower, and I cannot recall a time when I have seen a showdown like this. You've got the executive branch supposedly enforcing laws. You've got the legislative branch supposedly enacting laws. The judicial branch is supposed to be doing judicial review. But traditionally when Congress subpoenas somebody, people respond to the subpoena. That's not happening in this case. And then people are even invoking the thought of the 25th Amendment. Well, we got a lot to talk about. So why aren't we listening to Larry? Let's go there now. Larry Martinez, good evening.
Hey, good evening, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, sir. Is your head spinning? Yeah,
well, you know,
all this time.
You know, when you mention that, I guess it's just a relic of my early childhood past. Actually, not that much of childhood, but I think of the movie The Exorcist.
Yeah, good one.
And so, you know, maybe what America needs is a political exorcism.
I don't know, man. We may
Are
be
you the high
for that.
Priest? Are you the high priest of politics, Dave? You know, you can perform a political exorcism.
No, Craig? What Trump say? He's the man of wisdom. What's his thing?
I think it was something about his infinite wisdom.
Something like that.
I think it's ultimate wisdom, wasn't it?
Am I unmatched? And ultimate wisdom.
Yeah,
unmatched and ultimate wisdom.
Yeah, that's what I have.
So it's we're into the era of wizardry.
I'm not sure what to call this era, but and I was just making that assertion. Have you seen it? I mean, you're the political scientist. Can you recall a time in history where the executive branch has been so flagrant in ignoring the legislative branch?
Well, yes. I mean, you and I, Dave, were of the age where I was a sophomore at Cuesta College during the Watergate hearings of the spring of 1973. And so what was amazing was the fact that the 1972 elections took place. It was the first time I could vote because of the recently ratified constitutional amendment in 1971 that lowered the voting age to 18.
Yeah, so, I remember, yep.
So I remember going to the poll and to polling place in the car with my dad, and we were arguing politics and realizing we were going to essentially negate each other's vote for president.
But
1972.
I take your point about the parallel to Watergate, except that Nixon eventually had to cave.
Yeah, and so we didn't get the full run through of a complete impeachment process, and you know, one of the problems is that you have to sort of get familiar with the terminology, because an impeachment is often used in the media and in general conversation to denote the entire process for removing a president, and it's not true constitutionally. An impeachment actually only occurs in the House of Representatives, according to the Constitution.
Right.
And it only is really an indictment. That is, the House, it's something similar to a grand jury deciding that there's enough evidence to go to trial. And so that's the only thing they're voting on, is to start the trial. And it's the trial that ultimately determines guilt or innocence and whether or not that official, and this doesn't apply only to the president. It applies to the president other officers of the federal government, such as judges. They can be impeached, and they have been impeached. And removed from office. And so it's important to note that what's going on under the rubric of impeachment is only the process to decide by a majority vote of the House whether or not to move to trial in the Senate. And that's it.
National media is stirring things up, quoting some people on the Hill, that we're in a constitutional crisis, Larry. We're facing a constitutional crisis, are we?
Well, I mean, no, not really, because there hasn't been a formal article of impeachment that's been voted on by the House. So all this is, we've heard many, many times before when there's been a disagreement between the White House and Congress over whether or not a cabinet official, for instance, can be forced to testify before Congress on the record because the White House invokes what's known as executive privilege. So to what degree, then, are conversations in the White House under the control of the executive branch? And under what conditions, then, are those conversations or actions in the White House subject to the scrutiny of Congress, where Congress has the power to force someone against their political will or their legal will to testify on the record in front of a committee of Congress? Well, we have a set of institutions that are separate, but they share powers. So the White House has, the executive branch has certain powers that are executive in nature, but they also share legislative powers with Congress. So, for instance, the Vice President of the United States is simultaneously the President of the U.S. Senate. So anytime Mike Pence, who's Vice President, wants to, the Vice President can go down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol building and preside over the Senate. And in the case of a tie vote of the Senate, the Vice President of the United States decides a legislative vote by breaking the tie. So the vice president's office is neither wholly, entirely executive branch. It also shares a legislative role.
That's true.
Similarly for the president receives legislation passed by the Congress, and it's the president's option whether or not to sign that legislation. The president may elect to veto it. So the president plays a very important legislative action. So this is separate institutions sharing powers. And this this tug-of-war going on over the, let's say, claim that the House of Representatives can force someone in the presidency, that is in the office of the president, to testify in Congress, runs up against this built-in separate institutions sharing powers structure that we have in the United States.
All right, we're joined in conversation by Dr. Larry Martinez, giving us his take about what's happening in Washington, D.C. We'll pick up that conversation. Your phone call still to come. You're listening to AM 920, FM 96.5, News Talk, KVEC. Nowhere else. Nowhere else is there a platform. I don't know. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Charlie Puffer of Puffers is going to be here on Wednesday making his very first appearance on this broadcast. Turns out he's a fellow Chicagoan. Looking forward to having Charlie Puffer on Hometown Radio. Also on Tuesday, our restaurant critics, Kathy Marks Hardesty and Terry Bayes, will be with us. Haven't heard from them in a while. Mothers for Nuclear Power will be with us on Monday, getting their take on things. It's the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. We are back with Larry Martinez. And Larry, this is apropos of nothing, I guess, but apparently, according to the press, President Trump defended his controversial decision to yank support for the Kurdish fighters by noting that the Kurds didn't help the U.S. during World War II and the invasion of Normandy.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. You don't have to comment. I'm just mentioning it.
Usually we like it when, people bring up history, but this is quite interesting.
So, separation of powers and everything happening now, there's talk of impeachment. Public support for impeachment has inched up. You explained in the first segment the very important difference between impeaching a president, actually putting him on trial. There has been talk over the last 3 years about the 25th Amendment. So we should throw that out there. Because why not? Because why not?
Well, a lot of things have happened since the Constitution was originally ratified back in 1788. So it was written up, it was signed on September 17, 1787. And was ratified then by the nine states required for ratification the following year, and then it was put into effect. And since then, we've seen changes in the way we elect the president. That is, the 12th Amendment changed the Electoral College, and we have seen differences and changes in the way we elect the U.S. Senate.
Right.
So in 1913, the 17th Amendment removes the state legislatures from being the electors of the Senate to the people. So the people became the voters that elected the Senate, not the state legislatures. And similarly, when you talk about how to, let's say, remove someone from office, and especially this really crucial office of the presidency, there was built into the Constitution a legislative check on the executive branch, so that the legislative branch had the opportunity, if it felt it necessary and they had a very big majority of votes, they could remove a judge, they could remove a member of the cabinet, and they could remove then a president. And this would only occur with a two-thirds vote of all the senators present. So that is the final vote that would remove someone from office under the Constitution's provisions for impeachment. And so this gives the legislative branch, and remember, the Senate, at the time this was written, it was elected by the state legislatures, not by the people. The only thing that the people directly elected was the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives, by a majority vote, could vote to indict, that is, impeach, and move it into a trial. But the House of Representatives, that is, the people, did not have the ability themselves to remove someone from office. That was given to the state legislatures, who elected the Senate. And so it's the Senate that conducts that votes on the trial, and it's presided over by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So even the judicial branch is involved. Okay, let's move forward then. We have then the 20th Amendment, which changed then the date that a president becomes president from the 4th of March to the 20th of January. Because Franklin Roosevelt had to wait over 4 months from the election to March in order to take office during a time of very intense and crucial economic crisis of the United States. We have the 22nd Amendment following Franklin Roosevelt that limits the presidential terms to two terms. And then we have the 25th Amendment, which was proposed a few months after President Kennedy was assassinated, and it then was amended to the Constitution when three-fourths of the states ratified it. And this was to take into account what would happen, for instance, in a scenario if President John Kennedy had not been killed, but instead had been severely wounded with a head wound, but had been kept alive by medical science and was still alive. What then is the status of the vice presidency? What's the status of the presidency when a president is incapacitated or unable to discharge the duties of the office? And so, looking at the vast panorama of history, you can see that when the Constitution was written up, it was in the era of horse and buggy and sailing ships. And so for the first half of the history of this country, all the political power resided with Congress, because the presidency, up until the Civil War, was relatively limited in its scope of power compared to what Congress exerted. Why? Because war could be declared, because it took weeks for ships to cross the Atlantic, and so forth. Okay.
So I got 2 minutes to explain the
25th
Amendment.
Okay, 2 minutes to explain the 25th Amendment.
2 minute warning.
The 2 minute warning. The 25th Amendment was necessary because of nuclear war. So in other words, a foreign adversary in the United States could incapacitate the executive branch by a nuclear strike that decapitated the executive branch, and you had to have some mechanism in there for restoring then the succession of command so that the United States was able to retaliate in a nuclear war. So the Presidential Succession Act of 1947 started that process, and it was completed with the 25th Amendment. And so that's where we are today.
But the amendment itself calls for the removal of the president?
The amendment covers cases where the president is unable to discharge the duties of the office. So, for instance, when Ronald Reagan had to undergo surgical procedures, he then formally handed off power to George Bush as vice president during the time he was under anesthesia, so that a foreign adversary could not attack the United States while the president is in the operating room. And we always had a fully empowered president at the helm, even during those times when the actual president was, for instance, in anesthesia.
All right, Dr. Larry Martinez, talking a little bit about the 25th Amendment. When we come back, we'll find out how that applies to the current events. Your phone call still to come. I'm Dave Congleton. Glad to have you with us this afternoon. Stick around. Top of the year's ABC Radio News, and make way for the brand new show on KVCR, American Stories. We are continuing our conversation with Dr. Larry Martinez about the supposed balance of power in Washington, D.C., a little bit about the 25th Amendment, a little bit about how this impeachment process works. And Larry, as I come back to you, that story about Trump and the Kurds has now become the lead story on the Washington Post. He's still defending his decision about cutting off the Kurds by saying they didn't help us during World War II.
Yeah, and it follows just by, what, a day from his previous tweet where he talks about his wisdom. What was the exact phrase on the wisdom?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So, So to invoke World War II 70 years ago, I mean, this is quite interesting as a justification for something that even a steadfast Republican senator and expert, actually, on foreign military policy, Lindsey Graham, came out very vociferously against the Trump decision to withdraw U.S. troops and allow Turkish troops to attack our former allies, the Kurds. And so,
where were those Kurds at Normandy? Damn it!
Yeah. So anyway,
All right. Anyway, Dr. Larry Martinez is here. We're welcoming your phone calls if you want in on the conversation. 805-543-8830. 800-549-5832. We're talking balance of powers. We're talking about the impeachment process and also about the 25th Amendment. So take the 25th Amendment, Larry, and apply it to President Trump. How might it work out?
Yeah, so here's where it's Section 3 of the 25th Amendment, which says that the president may say that he is going to be temporarily unable to discharge the duties and powers of the office due to, most commonly, a medical procedure. So the president then sends a written declaration of this to the Speaker of the House and the President Pro Tem of the Senate. And then when the medical procedure is over, the president sends a written declaration of such to the same two people, and the president is once again fully the president. During the interim, the vice president is the acting president. Yeah. And so that takes care of the scenario where a president is in some kind of medical procedure.
All right, let's take some calls. We've got Dr. Larry Martinez on this broadcast. I'm hoping he's locked in here. And let's try Bob on KVEC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Dr. Martinez.
Hi, Bob.
Larry, on the issue of Trump asking for the House to take a vote on impeachment proceedings, he has no grounds to demand this. The House determines the rules they operate under. And did they not change the rules after the Clinton impeachment to allow them to move forward with inquiry without having to have a resolution vote to begin?
Yeah, my understanding, a very good question. My understanding is that the Constitution is silent on this, and so the assumption or the default is the House runs its own affairs. So the House passes House resolutions that establish the rules of the House.
All right.
And so that's they're following their own rules.
Bob?
On my second issue, I have a theory that's a little deep, that the reason why Trump doesn't have any permanent cabinet members that have to be approved by the Senate is these appointed temporary members cannot get together and vote on the 25th Amendment. And that way he's protecting himself from having that enabled on him.
Oh, that's an interesting point, is that because they are acting, does that qualify them under the fourth section of the 25th Amendment to vote on a declaration that the president is incapable of? That's very interesting. Interesting. I don't know.
All right, Bob, thank you for calling. Let's go to Jake and Arroyo Grande on KVEC. Hi, Jake.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Jake.
For Dr. Martin, I want to ask if the vice president is embroiled in the scandal, and then he would go to the Senate and then say vote to deny the conviction, the impeachment trial.
Oh, the vice president would not have a deciding vote because it's by a two-thirds majority.
Okay.
What do you think?
Go
ahead, Jake.
What is the end game of that situation? There's two possibilities. He isn't convicted or is not in the Senate.
The end game is removal from office.
Okay, so
that's it. In the case it's only removal from office.
In the case he is unsuccessfully removed from office, what happened then?
Nothing changes.
No, yeah, he's just not removed from office.
As far as the politics is concerned, and the next election comes along, is there a damage as far as the Democratic candidate is concerned?
Well, that would be decided by the voters. So, but as far as the legal status of the president, if the conviction vote fails to get a two-thirds majority in the Senate, the president remains in office and nothing changes.
All right, Jake, thanks for the call. 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. We're Dr. Larry Martinez back on Hometown Radio. Matt's in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Matt.
Good evening to both of you.
Hi, Matt.
Hi. Dave, again, I appreciate the fact that you're addressing a very contemporaneous item.
That's why I get paid the big bucks for that, Matt. Thank you.
That is good. That is good. I think the 25th Amendment, what's been going on, discussion about it is totally inappropriate. And what they tried to do on a quiet basis was, in my judgment, was a coup attempt. I don't think it is, first of all, up to the speaker to determine whether they're going to do some type of an impeachment process, for that matter. It talks about the House, and the House hasn't passed a resolution as a whole. So the fact that the speaker keeps talking about these informal or formal inquiry, that's horse poo-poo.
Hang on, Matt, hang on. What do you say, Larry?
Well, you know, this is the same issue that the previous caller was bringing up. The House runs its own affairs, and so they can set the rules for impeachment by their own House-voted resolutions.
Well, the House hasn't voted, and they're unwilling to move on or pass a resolution or bring up for the vote of the House. They haven't been, they've been unwilling to do that because they're going to lose on that one, and so they don't want the bad blood that goes with it. Now, regarding the 25th thing, I think the coup attempt that they tried to do was actually a treasonous affair. That's what I think about the Democrats that were trying to go about it. Thank you again for your comments. I appreciate it, David.
Hi, Matt.
And Dr. Martinez.
Have a good night, Matt. Thank you. Any other comment for Matt, Larry?
Well, this has always been one of the suspicions of the 25th Amendment Section 4, which is where the vice president and the majority of the 15 cabinet officers, so you'd have to have 8 votes of the cabinet because there's 15 departments. So you'd have the vice president, 8 votes of the cabinet, and they could essentially in a declaration that the president's unable to fulfill the powers and duties of the office, they could remove the president and make the vice president the acting president. But then there are checks built in, and if after 4 days you are then subject to scrutiny by both houses of Congress, a two-thirds vote is required by both houses of Congress to continue this change of power in the presidency. So there is a sharing between the Congress and the presidency on Section 4.
Dr. Larry Martinez on Hometown Radio, 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832, as we focus a little bit this segment on the 25th Amendment. Chris is in Paso on KVEC. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Larry.
If you guys want to talk in German, fine.
Well, we could. I don't think
I'm sind Hebung. I'm sind Hebung.
That's fruitful for the audience.
All right. Go ahead, Chris.
I love all the discussion about procedure, and this is typical for Americans. We love procedure. Our procedural law is so bloated. But one of the things I've been looking for is what is the actual crime that Donald Trump supposedly has committed. And the only thing I've been able to find so far, aside from a lot of speechifying about abuse of power, is they say, well, a violation of a specific section in the federal election finance law that says you can't get or you can't solicit anything, either, what is it, they say donations or contributions, they're talking about money, any other thing of value from a foreign national. And they're all saying out there, and asking for information from a foreign government is another thing of value, and therefore that's impeachable. And that's frankly sheer idiocy when you start to do just a little bit of research on the law. It just amazes me. They've got, this would, if they're doing it that broadly in interpretation, it would be a violation of the law if a presidential candidate or his campaign were to say, hey, somebody send me a copy of the Financial Times of London, sending me a copy of that. Ooh, or if they were to do research, that's obviously ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think Larry's here just to talk about the process.
Well, yeah, the process. I would love to see a little bit more in-depth discussion about the substance of the charge, because when they get down to that, there is absolutely nothing there.
Larry?
Well, Chris is a lawyer, so, I mean, he's going to focus on the legal. I'm a political scientist, so I focus on the political. So the impeachment process is a mixture of both legal and political. And ultimately, it is not legal, because it's whatever the House determines to constitute grounds that the House can back in an article of impeachment. It's sent to the Senate. The Senate conducts, under Senate rules, a trial presided over by the Chief Justice. And if two-thirds, not a unanimous jury, it's a two-thirds jury, if they vote to remove from office, that's what happens.
That's right.
So
Chris, hang on.
Having a hard-boiled egg at the narrow end instead of the thick end.
Let Larry make his point. Go ahead, Larry.
I know that it makes people uncomfortable, but it is ultimately a political trial.
That's right. That's right. And it says in the Constitution, high crimes and misdemeanors, but that's whatever.
No, it says treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah, a couple others there. But they can pop under that language anything they want on the substance. The only thing I've been hearing them talking about so far is this one federal finance thing, and I've been waiting to see someone from the other side, from the Democratic side, say this is the statute that this is a high crime and misdemeanor or bribery or whatever it was that we think he committed, and I haven't heard anything yet, or very little, except this thing about federal finance law.
All right, Chris. Thank you very much for calling in. Appreciate it. Larry Martinez on this broadcast, PhD extraordinaire, 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832. If you want in on the conversation, we need to hear from you now, please. Off the Stolberg Law KVC text line, a listener, Larry, asked this question. Can the vice president vote on any floor vote or just as a tiebreaker?
Only as a tiebreaker. So if this, we have, who is present and voting in the Senate, and if it comes down to a tie, then the president may cast a vote.
According to Politico.com, half the voters support the impeachment and removal of President Trump, according to a new Politico poll. The poll conducted Monday and Tuesday shows that 50% of registered voters surveyed would support the Senate's removing Trump from office, while 43% opposed the president's removal. 7% of voters were undecided. That's been a pretty big shift.
Look at the numbers. The numbers are not a two-thirds majority of the U.S. public favoring removal from office. And the Senate would have to come up with a two-thirds vote in favor of removal. So public opinion is not even close to a two-thirds verdict of the public for removal from office.
Yes, but my only point, Larry, is that in the last 30 days, there's been a major shift.
Well, yes. So, but public opinion is notoriously fickle and is subject to all kinds of things. And so, and in fact, I was just talking to somebody who is very knowledgeable about this because he deals with marketing, is that people lie all the time to pollsters. You can't believe polls because people lie all the time.
And what's their motive? What's their motive in lying?
Because typically is that people, when they're interviewed, feel that they must, let's say, gain the approval of the interviewer. So they're very unlikely to say something they think the interviewer would find offensive.
All right, if you want to end the conversation, we need to hear from you now, please. 805-543-8830, 800-549-5832 for Dr. Larry Martinez. And just to clarify, Professor, you're not here to say that you believe the 25th Amendment is going to be used against Trump, right?
No, we are looking at all of the mechanisms in the U.S. government that would come into play anytime. I mean, we do this all the time, is look at the way the federal government operates and the rules under which. I specialize in things like international war. And so when you talk about, I was just talking to my class last night about the threat of, let's say, a nuclear attack using drones. So, for instance, drones that cost $15,000 were able to hit an oil refinery in Saudi Arabia and cause damage in the billions. And so we're in an era of asymmetrical warfare. And a decapitation strike against the United States by a very cheap drone that any country can afford against the United States executive branch is something that people take very, very seriously. And in fact, after 9/11, they were really talking about the need for a constitutional amendment to allow the House of Representatives to be replaced in case that United Airlines 93 fulfilled what the terrorists wanted to do, which was probably to crash it into the Capitol.
Right.
If they had killed enough representatives, they could have stopped the passage of all legislation through Congress for months.
As we wind things up with Larry Martinez, a couple things here at the end out of the news. How much longer do you think Bernie Sanders is going to stay in the race given his heart attack?
I think that this is a major setback for him because of the fact that age was already an issue. And now with the revelation that it was not just a blocked artery and requiring relatively minor therapy of stents, that he did suffer a real heart attack. And I think that this will, let's say, bring the age issue up for Bernie. I think he's going to have to withdraw from the race.
And endorse Elizabeth Warren.
He will endorse whoever he wants to endorse. Right. Elizabeth Warren is probably closer to his financial and economic policy orientation.
Let's squeeze in the last call. We got Don in Los Osos. Hey, Don.
Hey, when I heard Professor Martinez's mention of a decapitation strike, what's his take, please, on electromagnetic pulse? I saw numbers of, they mean something to me scientifically, 50,000 volts per meter induced by an EMP nuclear warhead burst at 400 miles over the country. Those numbers to me mean destruction of electronics.
All right, we'll talk about that in our remaining minute. Don, thank you. What do you say, Larry?
Yeah, well, this is when we talk about command, control, and communications, when we're talking about the ability of the United States to effectively defend itself and to deliver a retaliatory strike, the command structure has to be there. And so the Presidential Succession Act of 1947 was specifically designed to take into account nuclear war, where one nuclear warhead or something that incapacitated the government, like a very high energy electromagnetic pulse that could destroy the computers that the government relies on, what is your plan B for the defense command structure of the United States?
Well,
so they've built it into law, but the EMP is definitely a threat.
Well, then PG&E could just pull all their power and we wouldn't have anything anyway.
I think a lot of people are going to rethink now getting solar panels on their house.
Well, we're out of time. Nice job, Dr. Larry Martinez. 15 seconds for a final thought.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed the conversation. We're all searching for the, let's say, what are the procedures for this constitutional, let's say, standoff between the executive and the legislative branch, and I urge people to read the Constitution.
All right, Larry, thank you for your time. As always, we'll come back and wrap things up. This is the Dave Congleton Show. By the way, I'm sure you heard the news already, but the Arroyo Grande City Council voted unanimously last night to approve a temporary use permit authorizing the Halloween in the Village event on October 31st. So now the children will have a safe place to go for Halloween. Not pointing any fingers, just glad that situation got resolved. Thanks again to Larry Martinez and all my guests today. Thanks, as always, to Craig Hill for his help, and thanks to you for listening. Oliver did great in his surgery, so that's good news, too. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Oliver, you can stay in my chair, but get ready, buddy. I'm coming home. Good night.
This is 920 AM.